ballet audience?
Well, I'd never really want to shock any audience. I like to surprise.
The choreographer Sir Matthew Bourne is my guest on Sound of Dance.
Often your company have not come through that classical world, so they find the music incredibly inspiring and refreshing.
We chart his unconventional path into the world of ballet.
I grew up loving... it's sort of slightly embarrassing now, but I love Judy Andrews and Barbara Streisand.
Nothing wrong with that, Matthew.
Join me, Katie Derham, for a new series of Sound of Dance, starting next Saturday afternoon at 3 on BBC Radio 3.
This is BBC Radio 3. It's Sunday evening. It's 7:30. That means it's time for Drama on 3. And this week, a dramatisation of B.S. Johnson's experimental 1960s novel, The Unfortunates. It tells the story of a sports writer who visits a strange city to cover a football match and finds that it triggers memories of an old friend. The order of the scenes was randomised for this broadcast in keeping with the novel, which was published in loose, unbound sections intended to be read in any order. So, here is The Unfortunates by B.S. Johnson, starring Martin Freeman.
Just arrived on platform 1 is the 8:30 service from London St Pancras.
All right, don't bellow.
This train is a 12:05
service for Leeds. Ascending. Time to get bearings. Always the same. Another Saturday, another unknown city, another nondescript station, another god-awful match. But I know this city... This green ticket hall, that long office, half-rounded at its ends. All brown glazed tiles. Of course, I know this city. How did I not realise, when he said go and do City this week against United at home, that it was this city? Tony. This town. His town, their town. Covered courtyard, yes. Taxis, the station exit on a bridge, yes, of course. The blackened gantries like steel gibbets above the Midland Red Wall opposite. Tony. His cheeks sallowed and collapsed. His gums shriveled. His teeth now standing free of each other in the unnatural half yawn of his mouth. The whole face, too, now collapsed. The thick-framed glasses the only constant. The mouth held open as in a controlled scream. But no sound. The mind circles at random, does not remember, from one moment to another. Other things interpose themselves. No, pull myself together. Time, 12:15. 2 hours to kill before I need to think of work, of going on, of the match. Wander off, then. I should turn right, and right towards the city centre. Ah, sign to Castle Boulevard. Yes, I remember now. They call streets boulevards in this city. Ah, there, that pub. That pub. One visit here, I came from the station, sullen, savage at myself for some reason, and went into that pub, a Green Shield Worthington, as I remember, if I remember, to arrive at their place in a fit state, Tony and June's, smothering my misery. Which must have been because of Wendy, now I come to define it, isolate it, her treachery. We came to this city together. Yes, that's it, to the left. Here, over the bridge, there's a Chinese restaurant where the four of us went that first time. Wendy didn't like lychees. It's her first taste of them, saying...
No, horrible. They're horrible.
And Tony and June were embarrassed, I think.
No, horrible. They're horrible.
Do you think so?
Disgusting. They're an acquired taste. Like little balls of cotton wool soaked in meths.
I must have said something.
What strange taste you must have to recognise the taste of meths.
No.
What strange taste you must have to recognise them as such.
Or...
That's suburban innocence for you.
No doubt. Some such. Or Tony, was it Tony?
Well,
That's the price of experience.
He must have. Or I might have said that. The mine circles at random. Tony. So, lunch, then work, and through a whole day here. Up there, yes, there's a castle here, of course, of a kind, up on its stump of rock. Sandstone, as I remember, pale yellow, friable. The pub at its foot with some rooms carved out of the solid rock, it's that soft. And other caves, dwellings, used until comparatively recently. Did Tony tell me that? He had a great mind for historical trivia. Trivia to me, important to him. Tidy, his mind. Not, as mine is, random, the circuit breakers falling at hazard, tripped equally by association and non-association, repetition. Him. A fine mind, ordered. A need to communicate embodied in it, too. So how can I place his order and his disintegration? Cream paint everywhere I go today, it seems. Ah, but here, less stained. They can't smoke so much while they're eating. Their suburban house in this city. Their garden.
You? Gardening?
Yes.
Get the landlord to do it.
Yes, I could, I suppose.
I thought you were enjoying the chance to work, a little more money, the chance to have a house.
A whole house.
But you're working. Work.
Are you working now?
Hmm?
Are you getting much done?
Well, it's not my normal working conditions.
Yes, I found it hard to adjust here. The road noise.
It's your fan heater, that's my problem.
First time I saw a fan heater in that shabby front room. The fug it created and the humming noise. I'm sure that's why I tended to fall off to sleep, especially in the afternoons. I wrote a few lines. He made notes on half a dozen books while I was there in that fug. An alien place for me to work, fighting sleep.
The thing I find most good,
especially in the afternoons,
is that we have experts in many fields in the department.
As we talked.
But that none of them spends time considering the fields of study of their colleagues.
Or as he talked and I listened.
So that a medievalist will know nothing of the 19th century.
Shocking now to remember the times he bored me. Everyone is boring to someone or another, or everyone at some point, but his death makes me guilty that I do not value every word he ever said, every moment I knew him. Anyway, sometimes Tony's enthusiasms were too extreme, too indiscriminate. Though he did give me the Obelisk Press edition of Fanny Hill to read one night, in bed, said,
"It's part of my 18th century background."
Really?
Oh, yes. Enjoy it.
Which I did.
However you take it.
I derived great pleasure from its impossible but entertaining enormities. Generosity. He was fairly depressed, that visit, in fact, because of the death of a friend, another postgraduate.
Paul. Very bright, well balanced.
What happened?
Killed himself.
His wife found him.
We knew them both.
They were married just a few months. She came back one morning after a short trip out, didn't have her keys, knocked, then eventually looked through the letterbox.
To see his legs dangling.
Can you imagine it?
There were several strange things about it. He had no trousers on, and his toes were only an inch or so from the ground.
He had diagrams of a man hanging on his desk.
Measurements and calculations of a drop, a stairwell.
And a poem.
He'd been talking about it recently, the gratuitous act, as a philosophical phenomenon.
We went to the funeral.
Yes, it was a travesty, Christian. I think it was about sex.
She's Catholic. Hmm. They decided not to have children until they'd both finished their research.
And they both chose self-denial as their form of birth control. That must have been part of it.
Well, I'm not so interested in motives. Actions are what's important.
Well, that was an action, Brian.
Yes.
And it came from somewhere.
That was his way. He had a voracious appetite to understand, to inquire into as far as possible.
Something drove it.
So he said. Up there, the high mast. Radar, is it? Crown-like, a turret walkway on the building. They were building it then. Tony pointed it out to us, Wendy and I. A new landmark. Useful for finding our way about the city. We must have come up this hill, past here. He leading, Tony, we two lovers, like Merlin in a tale. We were that besotted, or ill-fated, at least I was. June later said as much.
You did seem besotted with her.
Or?
You did seem daft about her.
Something like that.
You did seem very much in love with her.
Yes, Wendy then. As not now. In this city, memories are not now of her, but only of her in relation to him. So his death changes the past. It shouldn't, yet it does. But she too, Wendy, is changed in my mind by what occurred later. It happens all the time. The intenseness of that... well, happiness is not the word. Fierce joy. Loving. Besottedness, perhaps. All that was changed from the time we walked up this hill behind our Merlin.
I booked you into the retreat.
Oh, is it Catholic?
Maybe, it may well be.
The guest house, boarding house?
It's a B&B. My parents stayed there once. They liked it.
Not full of nits and bedbugs, then.
Just whatever Brian brings with him.
Well, I only brought the wedding ring.
Brian?
I'll pretend I didn't hear.
Yeah, it was you who did the buying.
Well, only because you paid.
How much did he lavish on it?
2 shillings. It'll pass for gold anywhere we're likely to go.
I probably made a symbol out of that as well, at the time, or later, of our love of the dross. I was like that. Or yet again, do I impose this in the knowledge of what happened later? Constant distorting process. What is true about the past, about Wendy, about Tony? Outside the hotel, was he with us? I'm not sure I remember him there. I remember we did a double take, Wendy and I.
Well, ring the bell then.
No, wait.
What?
I forgot to put on the ring. Wait there.
I'm standing here like a fool.
It's okay. Act casually. We're just walking back towards the market square, and now I've found the ring, it's on my finger, and we can... Look, I just needed to check the time on the Market Square clock. Mm-hmm. Now we can head back.
Good, good. Let's get on with it, Mrs. Johnson.
Ring the bell then, Mr. Johnson. Oh, door's open.
Oh, go on, go in, don't giggle.
Good afternoon, sir, madam.
Hello, we have a reservation, Mr. and Mrs. Johnson.
Yes, here we are. 3 nights.
Yeah, that's right.
Room 6, first floor, stairs are on your right. Breakfast is from 7 to 9 in the conservatory.
Thank you.
Enjoy your stay.
We will, thank you.
No further deception required.
You need to carry my bag.
Do married women not do that?
No, only the independent, groundbreaking metropolitan lady of the current era.
Here you are, 6.
Oh, it's very quiet.
Yes.
Ta-da! Oh.
Oh. Well.
Not that bad.
No.
Yeah, try the bed.
What for?
The bounce.
Shall we?
Yes.
No bounce.
No bounce at all.
Oh, we'll be okay.
Stay there.
Why?
You know why.
No. Later.
Why not now?
Well, he might come and interrupt us. Throw us out.
I was always for making love the moment that we were alone, safe or fairly so, anywhere. That consuming besottedness. Our bed had a green cover, sun-faded. The dress Wendy wore was green too. Blue-green turquoise. 2-piece, was it? Knitted, very close-fitting. On that hard bed. But she said...
No, later.
It was love, though. It was, in that guest house. I still feel it as it was, not as it is now, although even in those 3 nights there was a declining spiral of interest, or at least performance, but the first night...
Oh, ow! Oh.
Well, it had its problems.
Sorry.
That hurt.
Yeah, sorry.
Just a little dry.
Yeah, sorry.
Are you Sure you want the light on?
Oh, yes.
Making sure, making love, that this was her, Wendy, that my dark thoughts supplied no substitute, that this was real.
Shall we try again?
Right.
She beneath me the second time, after not being able to sleep. Waking, then, to that, and waking her and making love once more before going to wash.
Come on. Come to the bathroom with me.
Do you think?
Of course. We're married.
Down a little, half landing. Wendy standing after dropping her dressing gown. Washing those breasts with a casualness inconsistent with the way they affected me. The way her pubic hair parted between her thighs.
What are you looking at?
Trust me, I'm a novelist. Or a would-be novelist.
Will I appear in your book like this?
The way her breasts bobbed, undulated, oscillated, massively dependent in their similar ways, but sometimes differently, independently, as she held her arms up to wash the pits, first one shifting her weight, then the other. The delicacy. Ha. Was it this night I tried to wake her in the dark when she was sleeping?
Hey.
No. No! Asleep.
She was quite violent in not wanting me, pushing me away. And I lay there for a long while, annoyed, not understanding, sulking. But in the morning...
I'm so sorry. Mm-hmm. I must have been asleep. I'm a monster when I'm asleep. I'm sorry. Do you forgive me?
Perhaps.
If you forgive me...
What?
Then I'll forgive you.
And she kissed me. And eased her warm leg over mine, and soon we had joined and were through and come. At least I was. She never did, as I remember. One of my greatest disappointments.
My mother says it only happens very, very rarely. For her, it only happened when she was having a child. Me or my brother. Both times.
You sure?
One other occasion. She never told me how it happened or what it was like.
How did Wendy feel? It was so often so difficult to know how she was feeling, what she felt. One morning she made the bed, perhaps she made it every morning, but I took a photograph of her without her knowing.
Hey.
Yes.
Was that a dignified pose?
As she knelt on the bed to reach across to the other side to tuck it in.
What was I doing?
Kneeling.
To catch, to record that line of her thigh. Swelling arse, the dependent breasts and falling beachmast brown hair.
I know what you were photographing.
It was for the record.
Long striding down a hill, the four of us, somewhere, in quite a rush to go somewhere. The theatre? And passing a shop at which June suddenly stopped.
This was the shop?
Hmm? Yes, that's it.
The shop?
Where we bought engagement rings for each other.
Red rubies.
And we felt somewhat superior.
Do we need to do that?
Outward symbols of our love.
No engagement rings.
Nope.
No.
They hadn't been married long then, and they were about to take a new flat in a superior area of the city, the estate or something like that, large red brick mansions, no two alike, and we all four went there Sunday, yes, for tea.
Come in. Yes, I'm more than happy to have guests.
Is that all right?
Your friends? Yes, quite happy. Come in.
There was a dog. She loved dogs, Wendy, and this was a spirited dog.
Oh, yes. Oh, you're a lovely old thing, aren't you? Oh, you are.
Hey, hey, come on. Come here, man. Come
here. Eyes for Wendy.
They'll come to me. I know animals.
Can I take him out to the lawn?
Oh, yes.
Do, dear. Look at him.
I joined in, as I remember, joined in with her to participate rather than with the dog to show that I was spirited, gamey, to would not be left out, would make her share everything of hers as I shared everything of mine. That was the way I wanted it. That was the way I went out to get it. And where I went wrong. It doesn't matter now.
Tea?
Thank you. Lovely.
Tired, Brian?
That's a very energetic dog, that.
Oh, he's lovely. He's just lovely.
Genteel sandwiches with no crusts, but made with margarine and salty luncheon meat.
One of my favourite things.
Yes, it is. Really? Everything all right? Fine, thank you. Is your friend okay?
Brian?
What are you doing?
Sorry, just a little... tea going the wrong way. I'm fine.
Afterwards, walking up a hill with Wendy, away from the house, I embellished the incident.
It was a sliver of the meat.
A big piece.
A sliver. A wedge. It spurted out.
Spurted?
Spurted out from my sandwich and dropped into my tea.
Plopped.
Plopped, then. I was hoping no one had seen it, and when I drank, I made a big effort and caught hold of it with my front teeth, which is when you all started...
Looking at you.
Looking at me.
It hardly seems funny now. The new flat, a large one, curious shape, Tony trying the high, thick bed, saying...
We'll bounce!
To June's embarrassment, I thought.
Tony? We'll bounce in time on this one.
They asked us for Sunday lunch. We bought the meat, Wendy and I think. When we arrived, they were hardly ready for us. Something between them. Later, Wendy and I discussed this alone in our guest house.
Perhaps they were shamed.
By what?
Not up to the mark?
What mark?
Our mark, our physical loving.
You think?
Perhaps.
Last of the red-hot lovers.
Doesn't seem likely to me now, or rather there's some link. I've forgotten something June did or said that led me to think like that, but... What matters? What matters now? Ah, here comes the main course, yes. Looks marginally better than the poor start, the thin oxtail soup. Braised steak, is it?
One steak.
Yes, thank you.
Lunch on expenses.
There you are.
Well, this isn't the gourmet meal I promised myself. Still, came here not even out of nostalgia, just out of weariness, settling for the nearest. But the peas look at least not tinned, and the chips... Ah, perhaps not as bad. Taste, yes. Tender meat, and I think they used some wine in cooking. Yes, the lees at least. I promised myself a glass with this meal, but... No, I wouldn't trust them. Save it. Have half a bottle on the train tonight, perhaps. Yeah. This steak has a gravy distinctly related to the oxtail soup. Inevitable, perhaps. They come from the same animal. No salt in the peas. The chips redeem the meal. As far as chips can redeem a meal, which is not that far. The cutlery, catering cutlery, is seen in 100,000 cafes, restaurants, in no way convincing, not nearly quite genteel. Deep in my heart, I know I love chips. German family at the next table. What did he do in the war, the middle-aged grandfather? Anglicised mother. Charming little girl. Teeth slightly bucked. Well, polish it off after. Cheeses. No camembert. Never mind. The meal has been a disaster. Made myself some cream cracker sandwiches with cheddar to smuggle out with me in paper napkins for the long stretches ahead. The Saturday, was it? Or the Thursday before?
Hello, Finsbury 217?
Hello, Brian.
It was late.
Oh, June, how are things? We're just arranging for the visit.
There's no need.
Oh?
Tony died this evening.
Oh, June, I'm so sorry.
He didn't wake up from his sleep. He just didn't wake up.
But previously there had been the opposite of a relapse, 3 days when his mind had been virtually normal, for which she'd been grateful, June.
It had seemed like a miracle. He still couldn't move, but his mind had come back, and we talked, seriously talked about everything.
Everything.
It was the first time that we had talked about death.
This pokey lane, a blackened sandstone church. The architecture, nothing here in general, as I remember.
You'd think she was a princess the way he's going on.
Maybe that's what he thinks about.
The shopper's accents.
A what? A car transporter. A dinky car transporter.
The boy demanding toys from his father in this alley. Scooters, 4, 5, sweeping around. Dangerous angle, but I must have cornered nearer my ear hole when I had my aerial red hunter. You could lay it over on a bend further than any scooter. Ah, this is good, this shop. Yes. Black and gold and French polished. Ancient grocery. Sundries and provisions. Ham, shoulder and gammon. Pink luncheon meat. Dark rich brown eyes of back bacon dripping in pot packets. The white marble slabs, glass and chromium corner pieces. Hairy brawn. Packets of butter with a thick green drawing of a smiling cow on them. How the mind boggles. Is that the word? And the male assistants, none of them young, blue and thin white striped aprons, white shirt sleeves rolled up, a wire cheese cutter on the counter. What the Daily Telegraph would call the cardinal virtues of traditional grocery. Sawdust floor, small checker tiles, sawdust a kind of lubricant. Feels slightly unsafe, but they hardly let places like this exist any longer, at least in London.
Good afternoon, sir. What can I do for you?
Just a quarter of ham, please.
Certainly, sir. Would you like that wrapped?
Just loosely. The ham. Looks good. Already in packets of a quarter. He weighs it again, anyway, the assistant. Long hairs combed greyly, neatly across the expanse. Yes. Delicate hands. Careful to handle my quarter by the paper only, at least in my sight.
Just over a quarter there, sir?
That's fine, thank you. God knows what mouth dryings, crutch sawings, arse wipings went on in the preparation. Always the fear, the unknown. But he does his job so well, folds the cut leaves of ham, sheets, whatever, twice, is it, to make them fit the greaseproof bag.
There you are, sir.
Hands it to me with...
Thank you.
...something more than a professional smile.
1 and 6, that is, sir. Thank you.
Takes my money.
Town.
Gives me change.
Shilling change. Thank you.
Thank you. Turns to greet another Thank customer.
You. Who's next, please?
Who may be a stranger, as I am in this city, or a regular, perhaps.
1/2 pound of brawn, please.
Certainly, madam.
It's all the same to him. That's professionalism for you. But I have my ham. Why speculate further on the ways, the wiles, the witchnesses of shop assistants? Sometimes I think I shall become a surrealist. I must walk up in this direction, not against the shopper's stream. A good pub lunch would be as welcome as anything, but I'm hungry now. Ham. Eat ham now. Where? Yes, the square here, outside the council house. Seats. Pigeons, the seats with concrete frames too, wooden stretchers. This one. The ham, a prime consideration. Now, greaseproof, unfold the moist pink and white. Ah. And the bite. The salt satisfaction. Across the square, a military caravan. Recruiting posters, a loudspeaker. Army equipment of some kind. How old-fashioned the Queen's shilling ever in the marketplace, luring men with the technology, the glamour of it. Curious, the way these things... Oh. What use, speculation. I enjoy this ham, here, now, in this way, on this bench, in this place, for their own sakes. A windy place, this square. Roll paper into ball, edges, thus, yes, again, where to dispose of it? I mean, there must be municipal waste bins around here as well as municipal seats. Up, then. Ready. Across the square. Yes, there's a gents. I need a pee anyway. And there must be a place to dispose of unwanted balls of greaseproof paper there. Perhaps then a pub. Surely I must have gone to a pub round here with Tony. Yes. There, of course. Yates's Wine Lodge. Marvellous. A drink there. Tony introduced me to it. The great bar downstairs, the gallery round, the sugary music. But first, the business. On the beach, below Peacehaven, its bungalows spread cantankerously over the cliffs. And that name. After the first treatment, his parents had moved there from Ewell. I visited. We walked down.
Are they chalk, all these boulders, all across the path and the beach?
Foam.
What, pollution?
No. The boulders are white plastic foam. For a film. There's not enough chalk about on the downs, so they brought their own.
Chalk uplands and there's not enough chalk.
It all becomes small rocks aggregated on flint. Mm. Look, that's the real Sussex Down and stuff. Not what they're after.
What film was it?
I don't know, something dubious.
Are you all right?
Tired. Let me just get onto the beach.
Well, there's no better down there.
Strewn with rubber and plastic and tin rejectamenta, the off throne. Yeah. And the river from the valley, the little stream running down through the rocks and flint pebbles and chalk lumps of the beach. Or do I invent? Was there any sign of a stream there? It's so easy to invent by mistake, not remember what was there. What is truly remembered? Tony, I remember clearly on the beach.
Made it. There.
Big, in a loose cardigan. Thick-framed glasses which he adjusted with thumb and index finger extended on either hinge, a typical gesture of his, one of those movements by which one knows a person.
I'm going to sit.
Oh, okay, there's not really anywhere.
No, this'll do.
Right.
I realised later that he was tired at walking down and should want to sit at the end of the downhill part. No doubt I wandered down to the water by myself.
What are you doing?
I'm tasting the water.
Why?
To see if it's salt, I always do.
You hopeless city boy.
I wondered if the chalk would kill the saltiness.
And does it?
No.
No.
Where was June? We'd walked in Brighton bookshops, which Tony loved, after a bargain, I suppose. Why? I don't remember how June was, apart from the same as ever. Calm, tall, elegantly unglamorous, honest, realistic, infinitely supporting.
It's hard on her. Hard on us both, living with my parents again.
You have a room?
With a cot.
And a telly to watch?
Oh, yes. And walks on the downs, when I can manage. We sometimes go for miles, talk about what will happen if...
And you've the dog?
Yes.
You look the same. Same as usual.
Oh, yes.
I didn't want him to think I was treating him any differently, but it was hard.
You've not read that novel, the sections I brought?
I can't concentrate, Brian.
All right.
Don't be angry.
I'm not angry. How should I be angry?
I was angry. Or impatient. It was difficult. He looked just the same. But I was angry with him, the bearer of the disease, not the disease itself. As for the deity, ha! We must have talked in the pub. Can't remember anything he said, but something must have been discussed about the novel. The pub was on the cliffs, neon signs, a jukebox. Nothing else. nothing else. Yes, yes, I drove. He wasn't strong enough or confident enough. And I was still troubled then, burdening them with my troubles, which were Wendy, still Wendy, or rather the failure to find someone to replace her. No doubt I was boring these two, as I remember they were rather sharp about it.
It's been 3 years, Brian.
Hmm? What's 3 years?
More.
More than 3 years, if you...
Lamenting the loss of Wendy.
Yes.
Well, yes, it would be.
On and off.
Your failure, her defection, etc.
Right.
Brian, it's the loss you want. The self-suffering, not her.
Otherwise, he would have surely gone out and found her again and made it work.
And it helped. Paradoxically, it freed me from her. When we had walked up from the beach, Tony very quickly became tired.
I need to stop. I'll sit on the grass.
Tony?
Can you bring the car down? I won't be able to make it up to the top.
Well, I can't bring the car down to here. There's a barrier up there.
I'll ask at the house near the cliff. They have a key for the gate.
Will you be all right?
I'm not dying, Brian, just tired.
The man in the house, very courteous, walked with me to the top, saw the gate was opened and locked again, then rode down with me in the small, upright car, helped Tony in. He was sitting with the tea the woman had given him all in. And I started carefully, and I thought, luckily, on the shiny grass, on a slope with we two heavyweights up. Again, I could not understand his tiredness, except that he was tired, but he looked the same. He looked the same. For the first time, I realised it was serious. It was inside him. Unseen. He looked the same outwardly. A move to a new house of their own. Resolute preservation of the hope that it was going to be all right. They'd just changed the whole of his blood, and he was looking and feeling much better. So it was in his blood now. We visited, Ginny and I. The house was a new one, the estate's roads still unmade, and I, for some reason, I know the reason. I recorded him then.
There was a priest, Catholic, during that first time in the radiotherapy unit at Chester.
I still have his voice on that tape.
Predatory, really. Not so much on me, I could withstand it.
I bet you could.
But on others. He put pressure on me to declare a faith.
His fingers tampering with the mic.
I couldn't, in all honesty, do that.
And he kept switching it off. Perhaps it was too much for him. The thought that I won't be there to see this or that or whatever, even to see the article we were talking about.
What's that?
The miniature tape recorder. It's for recording interviews. Journalism.
You're not going to interview me.
It's for an article I'm writing, trying to prove the effect of bad planning and architecture on people. How housewives on suburban estates are being driven mad by tedium.
Well, I wouldn't disagree.
Let me put it on you.
Hello.
Dada, Dada,
no.
Dada.
No, don't get on me.
One cuddle.
Not now.
No, hold on. Let me just do this with your dad's blanket.
Come on, out of there. Don't disturb Daddy.
Me want cuddle and Mum.
Come on, come out. I'm sorry.
No, don't be. Let me find what I can for you to eat. There you go.
Nana.
Come on then. Let's eat that outside.
I just have to be so careful at this stage. Mm. When he climbs up like that, he's liable to kick me somewhere that hurts.
No, I understand.
There's more than one tumour in my chest and my ribs and they're so, so painful.
I'm sorry, I'm blundering around with my microphone.
No, put it on me, go on.
There.
It started about 2 years ago in Lincoln. In that hard winter, a lump on my collarbone. I went to a doctor in town and
I was unregistered and moving soon, and I suppose all that together meant the doctor created a fuss.
What kind of fuss?
I overheard him swearing about people like me.
No.
Moaning to his nurse or receptionist. He was probably overworked.
Why give him the benefit of any doubt?
Well, when he came to me, he was angry, and it was a perfunctory examination. He told me it was a little bit of fatty tissue. I could try and hit it with a book. It'd go as quickly as it came.
But it didn't.
It went on growing. When I eventually got to another doctor a month later in Chester, the new doctor knew bloody well what it was. Sent me to a hospital at once. They'd never known a tumour grow so fast.
I suppose I cynically noted then that everything to do with him he believed to be the biggest, the most important, unique.
If you ever have a lump, any lump, go to a doctor straight away. Don't hope or imagine it will go away of its own accord. Speed is of the essence.
The cliché.
Even a few hours.
For the first time, he looked really ill. His face appeared dry, the skin as if carelessly powdered. In places, his hair had grown thinner. There was dandruff in great yellow-grey flakes. His teeth were slightly more noticeable because he'd lost weight, a stone or more. His breathing, too, was affected. There were now great pauses in his conversation as he sighed to the limit of his lungs, which gave his words curious emphases and dramatizations, bathos. Oh, it's difficult to think of these things without terror.
Yes, I'd agree about the suburbs. Ewell, as a child, I remember walking what seemed immense distances on hard pavements on hot days.
Affecting to want his opinions, in fact, I wanted his voice. Too ghoulish. Perhaps I had to abandon the article. Someone, it must have been June, said to me and Ginny,
there are times.
Looking out at the newly sown front lawn, the back garden just as the builders had left it, the boy playing there, running out when it wasn't raining. It rained a lot on that visit. September it was, yes. But very dull. June said,
there are times when he just breaks down.
The boy in a sou'wester and yellow oilskins, little ones.
When he knows.
Playing curious games, tasks, apparently of his own devising, on his own, with a climbing frame, tents of carpets, bricks, things. Things. Chattering to himself in that invented tongue.
And he says he'll never live to see him grow up.
Was it June? Fail to remember. The mind has fuses. They asked me to be a secular godfather to the boy.
Just in case anything does happen to Tony.
They said, he said, she said, no doubt, offhandedly. The boy running into the kitchen all muddy and so on and so forth. That phrase he was always saying.
And so on and so forth.
Right to the end.
Here they come. God help us.
The pitch worn. The worn patches, like... There might be an image there. I could use an image there if I can think of one. If I can think of one.
Well, you never know. This could be the game of the century.
You say that every single time, Wilf.
And do in part believe it.
Always at the start of each match, the excitement that this might be the one match, the match in which someone betters Payne's 10 goals, where Hughie Gallagher, after being floored, nods one in while sitting down. But already I suspect the worst of these two sides now as they kick off.
Williams, look at him, a cart horse amongst donkeys.
I have no interest in who wins. Here to do a job only, competently. Cannot, as some do, choose arbitrarily one team. My loyalty was committed as a boy to Chelsea. This ground has a score indicator, the so-called popular end, the worst place to see the match. No cover. In the nature of things, their things.
Wakey, wakey, young man.
Oh, I'm still here.
City's goal had a narrow escape. Alter that cliche, cross it through later. Early on, when their goalkeeper,
a prehensile or something, Phipps, dropped a high centre from Lomax, but fearlessly, courageously, indomitably, recklessly, notwithstanding, dropped himself, followed it, and smothered the attempts of two converging united forwards to force the ball into the net or something. Hope I won't need to use that. In the distance, a water tower stacks. Green tower crane.
Look at that! He's being paid for that!
Again, Phipps was at fault when he was caught too far out by a long, tentative, thoughtful cross from United defender Thompson. But to his obvious relief, the ball landed in the top netting just behind the bar. Clumsy. A slip of paper in attendance. Pass it along to the next reporter.
24,833 poor sods have paid good money to see this drivel.
You're going to put that in your report?
I'm tempted.
Look at him! Phipps, you waste of time!
It was obviously not Phipps's day. They'll get the apostrophe wrong, or do I underestimate them? And yet, in one way, it was his lucky day. Holman, hunting, yes. Round for a way through, that's a sort of horrible pun they hate. I enjoy, and trying to get through them too. Found a gap in City's defence and sent Williams racing, no, through it. Incredibly, no, all too credibly, Lomax stubbed the ball in his haste and it cleared the City bar by a good 3 feet.
Who was that?
Rob played him in.
Edson in the United goal, saved well from Furse after Rob had set up a fine chance with an elusive, how the cliches well up, sinuous dribble. Yes. And the same player actually had the ball in Edson's net.
Time? 6 minutes.
After 6 minutes, only to be ruled offside. City fans at the so-called popular end howled furiously at the...
Time?
1 minute later than the last time you asked.
7th minute, when Wisdom, picking up a long punt out of defence, tricked the only man between him and goal, only to be two onlys, brought arrested in his progress by being grasped about the neck, arm grabbed by Thompson, and their ire, oh, was justified, for the resulting free kick from 40, 35 yards was no adequate compensation for what must have been a near certain goal.
He's a devious little so-and-so, Thompson.
Sell his granny to stop a goal.
On the other hand, Thompson's action may be regarded with a certain Machiavellian justification.
How much more of this rubbish?
34 minutes to half-time.
Go on, shovel him!
That's more like it.
Who was that?
Mull.
In the book.
In the 12th minute, Wisdom failed to survive. Rise after a crunching tackle by Mull and was removed on a stretcher with a suspected ankle or what? Mull had his name taken and Beresford substituted fresh grist to Mull's mill or something. Something on it goes. Hope I can bloody pull this together. It would help if there were anything worth writing about. Even if it's a bad match, they tell you disguise it right as though it were a good match. Well, bollocks to that. Bollocks to this stinking match. Crowd surges forward to see the corner opposite. A wave in motion slumps back again. My hand numbs from cold, my mind from this tedium. Does this bloody reporting effect destroy even my own interest in language? Sometimes I feel I've mislaid, perhaps, not lost something through this reporting under the pressure of deadlines, using the words which first come into my head, which is not good. Relying on the chance of real words, which may come in only the 2 hours of a match and the writing about it. Oh, what the hell. Not to descend to the methods of the heavy mob who have their telling phrases thought out in a notebook already. I've seen them at it. Curly Bollocks himself, at least, the multi-million circulators. A fast, violently in-swinging cross from Kelvin was proved too fast and in swung for Williams as the scent.
Christ, no!
Can you believe it?
I can, I saw it with me own eyes.
That's the story, then. The story, as the subs will think. It appeared the most innocuous of efforts. Gordon tried a long shot, but mishit it with that anticlimactic inefficiency which had characterised the whole match, and as Edson advanced and stopped academically correctly to gather the ground shot with his body behind it, some demon, chance, gremlin, trog thought took over in Mull's mind that he could stop it himself, and accordingly stuck out a boot, to the chagrin of the rest of the United players, however, and the unholy delight of the City supporters, who must be used to and thrive on this kind of farce, be weaned on it, welcome it. The ball spun lazily, slowly, inevitably off his boot in a lazy parabola, as some would say, looping up and clear of the still stooping Edson's now upreaching arms to bounce once before, crossing the line into the back of the United net. That leaves the goalie in a very strange position, posture. Now, I must hack this into some shape, make it into 500 well-chosen words. Yes, 500, they asked for. To hell with what happens in the rest of the match. Get on by 5 in 40 minutes. That will have to do. Now, the telephone. The outside one, with luck. So, Tony came to his parents at Brighton for the last time. His father talked to me.
They've given him new blood. That's what they call it.
Walking round the garden of the bungalow on the windy down. The flowers.
The flowers grow so well here. Everything bursting with life.
How long have you known?
Since he asked us to go up to the new house and see them. We never expected this. You know the prognosis now?
No.
6 weeks. He kept it from us.
What nature of deception is that, I wonder? What are the morals of that?
I can't walk here now. It's too alive.
The flowers, his greenhouse, the prize winner he was, they were.
Can you understand it? Can you understand why his mother had to go through such pain bearing him? Only for this to happen now.
Later, much later, when Ginny and I were having a baby ourselves, June told us...
Tony's mum was in labour for 3 days.
Was it, or more?
Tony's mum was in labour for 4 days. Oh. I'm sorry, this isn't helpful, is it, Ginny? Right. Stories from the labour ward.
Don't worry, I'm pretty prepared.
His birth had been a difficult one. His dying... Now, no less so, more so now. In those few weeks since we'd seen him, he was grossly altered, distressingly. His face had shrunken, lost much of its flabbiness, rotundness, life. The skin was now tighter, so that it was shocking, yes, to recognise him from what he had been then. In that same front room of the bungalow. It was their home now, June and Tony and the boy. He was too big for a cot, but he had to be in with them.
We've bought a tape recorder now. And we record conversations and so on.
And so forth.
Yes, and so forth. When I can speak, when I'm up to it. I try to write poems, think them through, speak them into it.
You know, a poem finds you, doesn't it?
You, maybe. I have to work at it.
The boy running in and out, stopping suddenly at the sight of us, solemn by the bed.
You're my daddy, you're not my daddy.
As suddenly going on playing games by himself, running into rooms, saying something in his invented language. Running out again.
He doesn't know what's wrong. But he can see.
As you could. I slip into the second person in defence. His eyes stood out, stared. Fixed you, staring for longer moments than you wanted, than I wanted. Yes. And his teeth, of course, in that fleshy mouth, but now the mouth wasn't fleshy. The flesh was gone. Not gone, but tautened, disfigured, and the teeth were there, their roots showing, the ones at the sides, the molars, incisors, gaps visible between them that were unexpected. At some point on that last visit, it was the last visit, I offended them.
You brought in a vicar?
I offended his father, I think.
Yes, of course.
But Tony doesn't want a vicar.
I think Tony and I and his wife and his mother should be the judges of that.
But when Tony spoke to me about a priest praying at the radiotherapy unit, he spelt praying with an E.
My son is dying.
We've discussed this, Tony and I, many times.
I know Tony, and I know what Tony wants and needs.
But everything we know about someone is perhaps not the same, even radically different from what others, another, may see or understand about them, him.
You know about writing?
Yes.
Well, I know about Tony.
What use are such generalizations? I told Tony about it.
Yes. Yes, that would have upset him.
When we did leave, that Sunday evening.
I will come down again next Sunday. That's the earliest we can.
I'm still hoping for a miracle. But it could end any time.
The last thing I said to him, all I had to give him, alone with him, with my coat on, about to go, the car waiting outside to run us to the station, staring down at him, facing those eyes, he staring back all the time now. Must have been a great effort for him. Yes. And I said, it was all I had, what else could I do? I said,
I'll get it all down, mate.
I'll get it all down.
It'll be very little.
Still those eyes.
That's all anyone's done.
I said,
very little.
Leaving the ground, the crowds gone, this rough forecourt littered now with rubbish, programmes. Today, a reasonable report. I needn't think of it again now until the morning when I see what the bastards have done to it. Yes, a reasonable report. Despite the match, despite Tony, all that this city means, this bridge to walk across, how wide it seems now. No one about. Begins to rain. The rain, think, light. Think. Images for rain are common. I can't think of one. Timetable. Intercity, Midland, yes. 17:55. Missed that one. No, not quite, but I will do on purpose. There's another at 1900. Restaurant car, too. Gets in about 2100, which is 9. Yes, I can tell Ginny about it then. Tony. Won't feel too tired to do that if I want to, if I need to, as I feel need now to tell her. I'll see. We were late for the funeral through a train being late. I think Tony would have found that amusing, perhaps. He was cremated after a simple non-religious service up somewhere on the Downs, but just as we arrived, they were coming out, the party. His mother, I still see, tears. One foot on the upper step, the other step down. Caught, I see her, as if in a still, held there, fixed. Friends, some of them I had met, had not seen since the days in this city, at the university. Besides the family, his father, dignified, carrying it, and June already looking alone. already looking bereaved. Lost, her face still showing all the pain she had carried. Tall. No mother was there, helping, I could see in some way. Here, I'll stop. The pub. This pub. Cut into the rock. This room I recognise instantly. Tony, June, Wendy and I sat here, yes. Why should that seem remarkable? It was only a few years ago. The memory's not that bad. I'm over-dramatising this. His death, this place, these occasions. Still a place for students, this room. Six there, their promising faces where the four of us sat 10 years ago, was it? Something like that. Life goes on. Bring on 14 brass and cart the corpses off. The room's carved from friable sandstone. That is now, to me, a cliché. Everything is reducible to a cliché. The action of carbonic acid on limestone.
Yes, sir.
A pint of best, please.
Pints of best coming up.
Someone gave us a lift back to the house, and as we went away over the shoulder of the hill, I looked down and back at the crematorium. Sunny, but there was still a blue haze, perhaps from the sea. And there was a straight column rising from the chimney of the crematorium. It went straight upwards into the haze, the sky. It was too neat, but it was. It was.
There you are, sir. 1 and 8.
Thank you.
Here it was we talked. He talked about the RAF, his national service. So must others, forever. Or talk about something like it and it doesn't matter to them now. It cannot have mattered at any time to me. So why this? If this is so meaningless, anything means something only if you impose meaning on it, which in itself is a meaningless thing, the imposition. In another room, there's the game with the ring, the horn. Could play, at least go in there and see. No. What point? The ceiling lining papered over, irregular paper, probably holding it up. No, perhaps, but... Brown. The fireplace, rough. Piano. They laugh. Some look at me. I am bizarre. Both are meaningless. Unfortunately. Oh. So?
Copy, please.
Copy. Thank you. Putting you through.
Copy. Go ahead.
Soccer, City versus United.
Go ahead.
Right. City 1, United 0. Skill was as uncommon as grass. On the bone-hyphen-bare pitch on which City beat United. At home yesterday, comma, and only a farcical incident enlivened the tedium and crudity of the match, full point, new par. Phipps, comma, tall and bulky as Frankenstein, comma, had a staggeringly lucky match in the City goal, full point. Within the first 10 minutes, he dropped an easy centre but followed the ball with a prehensile hand.
Spelling?
Yes, prehensile, hand. Just before two United forwards, feet hit it, comma. He was badly caught out of position by a Thompson shot which landed just behind his bar, comma. And then, comma, after Holman had successfully hunted four away through the City defence, comma, he clapped his great hands together in comic relief as, comma, from the far side of his goal, comma, he watched Lomax stub the ball over the bar from no more than 3 yards out, full point new par.
A dog. Whose dog in this crowd? I recall his dog or his parents' dog in the outback of Ewell. The long streets. Concrete 30s road with the frayed rubber expansion joints. Must have been summer, yes. Why else would we have been there? Did we go together? Yes, it was his parents' dog. I think we must have done, together, Wendy and I. She lived near there, on one of those depressing pre-war estates where the shops are miles distant. The pubs are dead when there are pubs. Tennis abounds. We played tennis that year, the year of that love, which ruined love for me for years afterwards. She used to try very hard to beat me. I used to raise my game at the last moment to deprive her. Perhaps I should have let her win at tennis. And what use are such speculations, such reconstructions? Tony and June did not play tennis with us. I don't know whether they played at all. Tony, I never knew, take any form of exercise except cricket, which is hardly exercise. We went to his parents' house for formal tea. And there is Derby Day to consider. His father, quiet but talkative.
Are you sure you don't want a little more of this sponge, Brian?
Oh, go on then.
His mother, soft, sweet, all fussing and solicitude. A formal tea. I don't remember Wendy being there at all.
Yes, thank you.
Does it matter? So much of what I rehearse of him involves her. They were associated. They had become more so in my mind. Did I see him? Did we see them during that summer? What does it matter? A court off Charing Cross Road, Cecil Court, yes, with a pub in it, Boxing Day evening. We met them there and kept it from them that we were breaking up. The last time they would see us together, pretending we were, that things were as they were before her betrayal. I wonder she consented to the pretense. Sitting at a table near the base of the staircase, my weak bladder, usual, trips up the stairs to the gents, holding her hand, kissing her cheek. Not to let Tony and June know that we were not lovers now. They didn't seem to notice anything different, or perhaps they pretended as well, even better than we did. A Scotch house, plaid on the walls, Youngers. There are lots of Youngers' houses. And at the Boxing Day ritual lunch we had, with Wendy there, I burnt the tablecloth with sparklers, indoor fireworks. My aunt and uncle were there as well. Great jollifications. Molten, red-hot globules burning themselves out on and through the cloth. Christmas Day at lunch, alone with my parents, I wept slowly into my mother's Christmas dinner. The food? Sprouts.
Thank you.
Just right with a nice touch of frost on them. The stuffing. Herby. Their reaction? Silence. Not solicitude, only solitude. Only a few days, a couple of weeks before, I told her how much I looked forward to Christmas with her.
This will be the first time ever, where I'll be returning to, you understand, the emotional security of childhood.
Really?
Our love will make Christmas like it was for me.
Before they told you that there wasn't a Father Christmas?
No.
You had to start giving presents as well?
Like it was in my innocence.
Or some such rubbish. Those melodramatic, idiotic moments in which life is completely wasted. These stale thoughts, this stale memory. Another memory of searching for finding a poem while walking on a refuse tip, filling in the lake of my childhood. They were eggshells, all the rejectamenta of London. while that poem was happening to me, she was betraying me, as I later found out, as I later learned. Even now, I forget exactly what it was she betrayed me over. Some other man, but I dealt with that. I do not have to think of that anymore. It is past. This city and Tony's death throw it up at me. Yes, me. Again. It was a Friday, I think. Just before the weekend.
Thank you. That's very good news.
I must have arrived at Tony's flat at about 4 PM.
Yes, I will.
That enormous flat. It seems enormous to me.
Yes, I have a friend visiting. We'll celebrate.
This must have been in the summer of the year after Wendy,
yes,
then.
Thanks again.
Celebration?
Hello, Brian. Results.
And?
I got an upper second.
Ah, well done.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Come up and we'll have some tea.
Time.
Good journey?
Oh, fair enough. Two lifts, just like when we met. When I hitched up to meet you for the magazine.
No money to pay you.
No money still. Anyway, one lift up to Northampton, one the rest of the way. A man taking coal to Newcastle, would you believe?
Nothing surprises me.
You're pleased, yes?
Relieved as much as anything. That means I can go on to research. I didn't put in as much work as I should have.
For the magazine?
Yes, and I was ill. Come in. I have to say, you don't look great, Brian.
Just tired. Exhausted, actually. We have a lot longer to wait.
Nine papers. And how did they go?
Make me a cup of tea and I'll tell you.
Yes, of course.
I knew then it hadn't gone so well. I didn't care what degree I got, only just that I got one at all.
Yours went well?
No, I failed one, that's for sure.
Number?
638.
638?
Yes.
You're on the next floor.
This is the first floor?
Yes, you're on the second.
History of the language, English literature?
Yes, for you, second floor.
Christ.
On the second, they tell me...
You're on the third floor.
History of the language, English literature?
Third floor.
Christ almighty. And when I got to the third...
You can't bring that briefcase in here.
Why not?
No bags in the examination hall.
So, I had to go down to the basement, the queue, then up again, all 16 stone, by which time I was late and also hot and discomforted and panic was setting in almost.
Yes, I'm sure it was.
And finally, to go in and find, as I looked up from my allocated seat, that directly in my line of vision was...
Wendy.
Wendy indeed. And every time I looked up during the whole 10 days of finals, I would see her sweet neck, the line of her shoulders, just the beginning of the curve of her left breast.
She was lucky. She was always lucky.
How so?
To have drawn a seat facing a wall.
Ah.
No distractions for her.
Yes, a distraction for you. Certainly a distraction.
I thought I was strong enough to stand that. And I looked at the paper, History of the Language, never before set. Ours was the first year. And it was nothing like we'd been led to expect it would be.
You know, we could submit a dissertation as well as the exam papers.
Well, fine for you.
I did, on Boswell. I'll let you read it.
I couldn't even start. Told the invigilator I was ill. She sent me to the first aid room.
Really?
And there was a middle-aged woman.
Oh, this is early.
Is it?
Yes. What's the trouble?
Well, my ex-girlfriend is sitting in the exam room in front of me, and it's having a very uncomfortable effect.
I see.
First aid for a broken heart. You'll appreciate the irony.
We can give you a sedative.
All right. And then you can finish your sandwich in peace before people really start flaking out.
Did you give up?
Nope. After about 20 minutes, I went back and tried the paper again.
Wrote very slowly. Perhaps it was the sedative.
After a while, they came and moved me, gave me a seat behind a pillow where my eyes couldn't pick her up. I knew I must have failed. A prof had told me that to fail any one paper was automatically to be brought down one class.
We could submit a collection of poems or a novel, short story, anything related directly to English literature.
You could?
Yes. Our choice.
While I, as a writer, was wrestling with 9 papers. I read Tony's dissertation. I was surprised by some of the spelling errors and the grammatical errors. He didn't have that sort of carefulness, that kind of talent. Well, is it important? What's important? Yeats's. Friendly, the first impression. First time I felt warmth since I came to this city this morning. Nearly full.
I could just
push my way through.
Excuse me, thank you.
It was here that I spoke to that Russian sailor and sat listening to music upstairs. So long ago. Without Tony then, where was he? What was I doing here on my own?
I'll have to get Beresford in.
He's only ever played in the reserves. What does he play for?
You should ask them for a game yourself.
We haven't got a hope, not against that defence.
They must be going later on. Yes. Time is it? 10 to 1. Ooh, what shall I have now? A wide range indeed in Yeats's. Imported beverages of all descriptions. Commonwealth ports and sherries. Australian white and red, very cheap. But I'll have Marsala, I think.
Yes, please.
A glass of Marsala, thank you.
Marsala, thank you.
For no other reason but that I want something thick and sweet and comforting. I need comforting. Why do I need comforting?
There you are. 2 and 6, please.
Thank you.
Thank you. You from London?
I am, yes, although I know it here.
Living here?
No, here for the game.
City supporter, are you?
Strictly neutral. I'm a reporter.
Oh, which paper?
The Observer.
Oh, I don't read that one. The People's more my style.
Can I get a drink here?
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm sure.
Comforting. Yes. Sweet. Not as thick as I'd anticipated. Right, now I can look around at people at the place, having the excuse of a drink in my hand, in my stomach. I don't ever remember coming in here with Tony or June. I can place him here in this kind of situation very easily in my mind, but not the occasion.
Hey, Vic, you're round, isn't it?
I'm not standing this one. I stood the first.
Bottles stacked high, ends out to the ceiling. Cream paint everywhere, smoke darkened. The customers enjoying their drinking, the conversation, the noise in here, lively, mainly middle-aged, the customers here. Enjoyable to be amongst them too, sipping my Marsala. Should have another. Yes, the warmth of it on this cold day is good for me. Or, so I persuade myself, Marsala is good for me.
Another, please.
Marsala?
That's right.
I should go upstairs. Balcony bar. For nostalgia's sake, should I? It will look odd since there's no service up there.
There you are.
Thank you.
Enjoy the match.
Yes.
Enjoy. Yes, I'll try. Nothing going on up there, but what the hell? She's rushed off her feet. There's no conversation to be had there. I don't mind looking odd while there's no one I know to see me to tell me I am odd. I must do it for a reason. The nostalgia. So up the stairs. Aluminium edges to red worn treads. The risers kicked thoroughly. 2 long sides. Cast railing round the rectangular well. No one up here. Windows to floor, tiny balconies outside, overlooking the square. Cast iron tables, yet with 4 mica tops. Bentwood chairs, seats panelled with brass studs and Rexine. Here it must have been I sat for the music, thought through a poem. This space cleared for the musicians, the piano, the violinists, music stand. Here. Turn. Full mirrors the other end, see myself. St. Bernard face, marching into my self. Dark raincoat, briefcase and papers under arm. Overweight, no, fat. Look away. The staircase half circles left down through these contented people, not a single one noticing my fatness or me. Good. 1 more Marsala. No, I'll fall asleep this afternoon. Have some wine with lunch, though, yes. Ooh, lunch. Tiny. time? Well, it's after 2. Must get to the ground then. There across the square, a queue, not too long, moving all the time. They have it well organised. A queue of buses too, I remember. They have great green and cream buses and trolleys as well, good. Perhaps I can get a trolley bus to the ground. I'll walk first, catch one if I need it further along. The disfiguring lines overhead, obsolete, quaint even now. How long is it since they were running in London? Remember them taking down the supports, masts, would they be called? Poles? The relief of the clearing of the air, literally, in certain streets. King Street, Hammersmith, seemed so much less oppressive once the overhead lines had gone. Remember that surge of acceleration riding in them in London as a child? You had to be holding on or you were thrown back. Buy a paper, yes. Yeah, football paper.
Paper, please. Thank you. Oi, cheers, mate. Oh, yes. Sorry, thanks.
Not London prices. Read the preview. Here. Shooting boots. Thank Christ I don't have to write that sort of preliminary, speculative, meaningless crap. Just my own kind of crap. Oh, it's beginning to rain. Rain like an extension of the air, wet air. Not falling as drops, but a fine air mist of wetness, of rain. Makes me blink. Depresses me one stage further. Does not soak or give me cause to feel abandoned. Does it? These men on their way to football, the same in any city, on their way to any match, their raincoats, their favours, across the bridge to the ground, we flow, our pace hurried, urgent for some reason, our flow, tide, mass, as we go past the buttresses of the bridge, in the eddy of each one, a cellar, programmes, favours, newspapers. There, the floodlight towers. You see them so often now, they've come to mean a football ground on the skyline. Stark scaffolds, light holders. A new feature since my father's time. Then all games took place in daylight. Winter kickoffs at 2:15. Early lunch for us. Taking sandwiches to the match. Ah, the inevitable comic gauntlet outside grounds. The photos of my colleagues on their billboards. Smooth grins and crinkly hair. Why is it most of them seem to look alike? The heavy mob. Armed to the teeth with colour and mixed metaphors. Well-paid suits. Or am I envious of them? The household names, Christ, no. No, it's only the money I'm envious of. I don't know how they earned that, the bastards. Look at this place. 4 sides, developed at random at different times. When shall I see a ground all of a piece, a new ground? Yeah, there's an enormous amount of money in football. Thousands of pounds a game. Hundreds of thousands a season. The number of people who go, it must have been the directors. Let the men on the terraces, their chief supporters, the sixpences of the masses, stand out in all weathers. And they do. Stupid bastards. Where's the press entrance? Let's get on with the bloody job. Paper, yes. Chelsea result.
Pink, please. Sixpence. Thank you.
Pink football paper. Photo. I thought that City bastard did that deliberately. This proves it. The goalkeeper has the ball safely and Robbins still has his foot drawn back to boot him. Chelsea result down the bottom nearly. West Brom 1, Chelsea 1. Could have been worse. Only 4 minutes to wait. This worn wooden handrail, familiar to the touch. Wood wears more quickly than most things. Like him. Like me. At something like the same rate, perhaps. How can I know? Gantries in the distance, defined against the night. This line is not electrified yet. Will it be? Fluorescent tubes. the name of the station on them, the new BR style. Or how new is it? Over there, worn platform flags, flaking slowly. Would not think any station could be so old, would wear so much so soon, would have so little life.
Train arriving at platform 2 is for London St Pancras, calling at London.
My death would be far easier than his in front of this train. Not suicide, just death. This instrument of death, as it were. I do not want to die, no. So much as an example to remind me I may not go as he did, that there are some better, because quicker, ways. The thought occurs, should relieve, even please, and passes. Buffet car. Price of meal governed by main dish. And if I have half a bottle of even something as cheap as Macon, it'll push it over what I can reasonably charge the office. Still, what the hell, I indulge. Indulge to preoccupy.
Good evening, sir. Evening, I think I'll have the beef, please, and a half bottle of Macon.
Certainly, sir.
Thanks.
Football pink. Reg Straker, City's manager, said after the match that he thought his boys played well enough to... Christ, I was supposed to go see Straker. Never thought of it. Haven't given it another thought. I wouldn't have got anything interesting out of him in a poxy interview anyway. What has he got to say that I'd be interested in? And I shall tell them bloody so. I never know where I am with journalism. The only satisfaction must be in the money, which is good for what the job is, I suppose, and the occasional good game. I go over and over these things, forget. River. Yes, they have good fishing, I seem to remember, up here. Ah, cheap salt butter that I like. June wrote to ask me for an epitaph for some memorial, his. The best I could do in the time were the three words he gave freely. In the end, she used nothing, gave him no memorial in words. Bow windows glimpsed at a crossing by the track in sodium lighting.
Your meal, sir.
Ah, thank you. No, don't worry, I'll bore that myself.
Certainly, sir.
In any case, it does not matter now. His death makes so much irrelevant. At least this is better than lunch. Sometimes they can be good, as this is, or even very good, railway meals. And the Macon, honest enough, rough, or so my common palate says. Can any death be meaningful? Or meaningless? Are there terms one can use about death? I don't know. I just feel the pain. Oh, the pain. A pool of light from the signal box. Someone inside, I imagine, waiting to make a decision which will set us moving again. Stephen will be in bed. But I can still look at him sleeping. My son. The warmth of returning to Ginny, to our son. The flat will be lit as I come across the square. Always stands out, as we do not have curtains, being on the second floor. And warm. Warmth. I can enjoy this for now. Must. It is all there is. Regular sag and rise, an intersection of the trackside telegraph lines against the sky. On their own, then echoing or contradicting the folds of the landscape, the sheds and shapes of the trackside towns. The difficulty is to understand without generalisation. In general, generalisation is to lie, to tell lies. Not how he died, not what he died of, even less why he died, are of concern to me. Only the fact that he did die, he is dead, is important. The loss to me, to us.
In B.S. Johnson's The Unfortunates, dramatised by Graham White, Brian was played by Martin Freeman. Tony was played by Patrick Kennedy, Wendy by Claire Rushbrook, and June by Jacqueline DeFerrari. Tony's father was played by Sean Baker, Tony's mother by Christine Kavanagh, and other parts were played by Tony Bell, Sally Orrick, Jude Akawudike, Lloyd Thomas, Sam Dale, Joseph Dudgeon and Greta Dudgeon. The director was Mary Peat. And in a new departure for the BBC, this audio dramatisation of The Unfortunates is available on voice-activated smart speakers. So if you have a smart speaker, you can listen to the audio in a random order, just as the writer B.S. Johnson originally intended. Just ask your smart speaker to enable The Unfortunates and you'll be able to listen to as many permutations of it as you like. Well, next week's drama is Autumn Journal. Colin Morgan reads Louis MacNeice's poetic testament of life in 1938, written amid the turbulence of the Munich Agreement and preparations for war. That's drama on three at the same time next Sunday evening, 7:30.
The heartbreak of this place. Love it and hate it like no place else on earth.
A story of betrayal, deception, love and revenge set over 24 hours.
He made my mother suffer. He should answer for that.
From the writer of The Fall.
Killing's a small thing. Getting away with it, that's not easy.
Starring Matthew Rhys, Anne Skelly and Jamie Dornan.
One thing is certain, sure. God will not smile on what is planned for tonight.
Death and Nightingales. A new three-part drama begins on Wednesday night at 9 on BBC Two.
This Sunday night on BBC Radio 3, it's a little after 9 o'clock, time for this evening's In Concert, presented by Kate Mollison.
Good evening. We've got a really mixed programme from around Europe tonight. The Brahms Clarinet Quintet in Prague. New Norwegian music from the Oslo Philharmonic. We've got late Beethoven from Elisabeth Leonskaya in Verbier. And we've got late Schumann from Daniela Gatti and the Mahler Chamber Orchestra. We start with the music of Schumann, his only opera, Genoveva, which is hardly ever performed. It's a tale of high passions, jealous accusations of adultery, some questionable morals and a dodgy libretto, but the music is stormy and rich and grisly, and you get a sense of all of that in the overture, which is performed here by the Mahler Chamber Orchestra under Daniela Gatti.